is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm down in Florida. Sean Bartley is working from California. And all across the baseball universe, this is the sound of Yankee fans everywhere after the news that we got on Monday.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Yeah, and that's because Gerrit Cole has an elbow issue. It's not fully defined. He was sent for an exam that occurred on Monday night. The Yankees haven't released all the information about that exam. But Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, said it would be difficult to envision Gerrit Cole starting on opening day, you know, given the timeline. So pretty ugly for the Yankees to lose the best pitcher on the planet even before we get out of spring training. We're going to be talking about that coming up with Paul Hembekides. The Giants have requested unconditional waivers on corner infielder J.D. Davis after he went unclaimed on outright waivers. According to reports out there today, they've spoken with a number of teams. Someone on the show later will connect them potentially with the Seattle Mariners. Lucas Giolito underwent right elbow surgery. That was expected. You know, that Tommy John surgery is what was talked about going into it, but we haven't gotten the exact nature of what went down there. The Dodgers, in lining up their first two games of the season, are picking Tyler Glasnow to start game one. Yoshinobu Yamamoto will start game two. Edwin Diaz went back out on a mound for the Mets, and he struck out the side. He went absolutely crazy. He was fired up. It was a great day for the Mets to have one of the best closers in baseball back on the mound.
Struck him out. Gets him with the slider. Just filthy. One batter, one strikeout. Welcome back, Edwin Diaz. Struck him out. Two strikeouts, two outs. Swung out and missed, strike three. What a return for Edwin Diaz. Striking out the side in his first appearance in almost a year.
The Yankees aren't the only team dealing with injuries. The Rays right-handed Taj Bradley was scheduled to start a game early this week for the Rays, but was a late scratch dealing with pectoral tightness. Earlier this week, the Rays sent Junior Caminero to AAA. And today we'll have a fun conversation with Hembo about the top 100 players that ESPN list that was released on Monday. Sean, what else you got?
I want to tell everybody to go check out the College Game Day podcast. Reese and Pete are going to be talking with Fran Brown, the newest head coach for Syracuse football.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Paul Hembekides, Hembo, of course, is the highest paid researcher in the sport. Hembo, how you doing this week?
I've never been better in my life. I got to spend the weekend in Cooperstown, New York with a couple buddies perusing the Baseball Hall of Fame on a quaint snowy day up in that quaint old town. And I really, really enjoyed myself, as I always do. I'm reminded when I'm up there how baseball should feel, and then I hop online and I see how much the Hall of Fame sucks there. So it's always a fun disconnect to see. But I enjoy going about every other year with my buddies, and we had as good a time this year as any.
So my favorite question to ask Bob Kendrick is what his favorite artifact is, or, you know, visitors that he's led around the Hall of Fame, the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame, you know, what their favorite artifact is. When you go there, what's your favorite artifact?
Wow. My favorite artifacts. You're going to have a hard time as someone who loves the cards finding anything that you like more than the Honus Wagner T206, because it's like the holy grail, of course, of yeah. Sports cards. But there's a section in the Hall of Fame where like many of baseball's records are, you sort of walk through and you see like most hits in a season, most RBI in a career, all these kinds of things. And there's a special Ted Williams display with every single baseball in the strike zone, as depicted in The Science of Hitting, with his batting average in each of the spots. It's astonishing to see, like, first of all, how big the strike zone was then, of course, but just how much of the plate he dominated, and also so much of the plate he didn't. But for that guy to hit .406 in a season, to hit more, higher than .340 for his career, and to have turned hitting into a science that way, that's one of my favorite spots in there, to show how Ted Williams hit based on the exact location. It's super, super cool for those that haven't seen it or read the book.
So it was just before I started covering the Padres that Tony Gwynn sat down with Ted Williams to talk hitting, and you can find these on YouTube. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for those conversations. My friend, you know, someone you know well, Peter Gammons, you know, has told me stories about that, how much he enjoyed that. That's really cool. The Yankees get big news. Gerrit Cole will, in all likelihood, miss the start of the season. The reality of the calendar is the reality of the calendar. Let's assume for the moment that he doesn't have a major catastrophic injury and it's some sort of a partial tear. You know how this works. They're going to shut him down. They'll give him some treatment, and then they'll start to ramp him back up. That's going to take weeks. It's not going to take 1 or 2 days. It's going to take a while for him to come back. You argued at the beginning of camp about the Yankees maybe going out and getting Blake Snell. You know, everything I hear around the edges is Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery are not going to be options for them in all likelihood because luxury tax implications, giving up the draft pick, et cetera, et cetera. How do you assess this injury and the potential impact on the Yankees?
Wow, it is massive. Obviously, Yankee fans across the country are crossing their fingers, desperately hoping that this is not going to scuttle his season, their entire season. But anytime you're dealing with a pitcher of his age with throwing arm discomfort in their elbow, you obviously have to brace for the worst. Now, God help us. Hopefully that Gerrit Cole, who was the best pitcher in baseball last year, 7.5 WAR, which was the best by any Yankee pitcher since Andy Pettitte in 1997, doesn't have to miss that much time. But either way, this was a position of weakness for the Yankees anyway. The Yankees were talking about addressing the starting rotation anyway with Gerrit Cole, penciled in for 5, 6, or 7 WAR. The big name that I have circled now, of course, like everyone else, is Dylan Cease, who's going to make $8 million this year. He's still in his arbitration years. You have one more year of control. The question is, will Brian Cashman be willing to fork over the prospects now, namely Spencer Jones, their star, or at least potential star outfield prospect, who so far they've been unwilling to include on deals. But Buster, you know as well as I do, the Yankees have operated with an extraordinary sense of urgency all winter long. They have to continue to double down on this. I mean, this is their thing. They're trying to win right now. They have Juan Soto for 1 year. They have Aaron Judge in his prime. Who knows what the Gerrit Cole of it all is going to yield, but you're not going to punt on your season just because Gerrit Cole's elbow doesn't come back all the way clean. So they're in a very tough position. I think you're right. I think they're much likelier to pivot to a trade, someone like Dylan Cease perhaps, than they are to sign a free agent just because they have already exceeded the luxury tax by so much.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to try to see what they have internally, you know, hope that they're able to hit past and create a margin for error with that offense. It'll be strong. I don't think they're going to panic. I mean, I've had general managers of other teams tell me, well, you know, Brian Cashman's been around forever. He's not going to panic in this situation. He's not going to go and make a trade. And I believe this, having watched him through the years, having talked to him a lot of times, he's not trading Spencer Jones. Brian tends to... if he has a guy he thinks is an elite prospect, he basically builds a moat around that guy. Then he's like, forget it. You can talk about other players. We're not talking about that guy. And Hembo, I saw him play the other day. What an athlete. Good Lord.
He is what they look like, to use the scouting parlance. Buster, before we move on, I do want to give you a couple Gerrit Cole numbers that I think sort of contextualize his remarkable durability. These are really loud, not necessarily surprising, but really loud. He's basically pitched 7 consecutive fully healthy seasons dating to 2017. Over that span, he's thrown 22,036 pitches. That is more than 1,800 more pitches than anybody in baseball over that span. Secondly, of those pitches, 5,777 of them have been thrown 97 plus, which is more than 1,500 more than any pitcher in baseball over that span. Good so obviously Lord. The volume is there. And when you're just blowing cheese for 7 years in a row without interruption, I hate to say this was inevitable, but my goodness, when you're a sort of a Gibraltar in cleats the way that he has been, it should not be a foregone conclusion that will necessarily live forever.
No, the tread comes off the tire, and just about everyone. I always like how when the discussion comes up about throwing programs, everyone points to Nolan Ryan and talks about, well, you know, look at Nolan Ryan, the way he did things. Well, Nolan Ryan was a ridiculous outlier, right, in terms of what he was able to accomplish, you know, and maintaining his velocity. Yeah, so we'll see where Gerrit Cole goes with that, but that's a great number. I said on the podcast the other day that, you know, when I heard about Mookie Betts moving from second base to shortstop, my feeling was, when I heard it, was like, That is not an infield you're going to win with in October. In the regular season with a strong offense, I get it, and I understand they're buying time, but I think he at some point going to have to go ahead and get a real shortstop like Willy Adames, move Mookie back to second base. What's your take on Mookie Betts to shortstop?
I think if there is anybody on the planet that could pull this off,
yeah,
I believe he is genuinely one of the best athletes this game has ever known. I mean, to go from being a world-class right fielder, which he is. I mean, among primary right fielders ever, he's first in defensive war, and Roberto Clemente is second. So we're talking about an elite of the elite corner outfielder in the history of baseball. He was +6 defensive runs saved at second base last season in a consequential number of innings and was a neutral in 98 innings at shortstop. I mean, that is impossible to pull off as someone who has played baseball for as long as he has and is as removed from playing shortstop as he was. That being said, I think that you're right. The idea that Mookie Betts is going to be jumping on a pile from shortstop after the Dodgers win the World Series strikes me as unlikely, strikes me as a pipe dream. And frankly, the fact that the Dodgers, this utter behemoth, are going into a season with Mookie Betts as their permanent for now shortstop, as Dave Roberts so eloquently put it, just strikes me as super weird. You know, this is a team that can afford whatever they want. They basically signed Tyler Glasnow to a 9-figure contract as a luxury piece because they wanted to. They invested an inordinate amount of money across their roster in all sorts of places. And you're going into a season with your right fielder, your 30-year-old right fielder, playing shortstop. It just struck me as very bizarre. And I'm not saying that Mookie can't pull it off, and I'm not saying that he won't. But I think it is very likely that you are right, that they're going to wind up looking a lot different the day after the trade deadline, whether it be Willy Adames, someone in-house, or someone else. But if Mookie Betts pulls this off, Buster, I think you have to pencil him in to be the MVP favorite in the National League because of the positional adjustment boost that he gets from playing shortstop and naturally the narrative that will occur as a result.
You're not kidding about him as a right fielder. I'll never forget a conversation I had with Buck Showalter about Betts. This is when Buck was managing the Orioles, and he said, he's the best right fielder. And I said, you mean the best right fielder in the American League? He goes, no, the best right fielder anywhere ever. he just talked about how much ground he covered on balls hit in front of him. He was just blown away by his range. So I think he'll wind up back at second base. And you know, this is all due respect to Max Muncy and all due respect to, you know, Gavin Lux and Freddie Freeman, who's an above average first baseman. I think you'd agree with me. Having Muncy, Betts, Lux, Freeman in a close game in October, for now, based on what we know, I would be concerned. We're going to be talking, coming up with Justin Morneau, about the Minnesota Twins. We're going to have a little Twins preview today. It really struck me the other day how much confidence is in that room that they're going to be really good. Are you buying?
I'm buying. I like this club a lot. Their over-under at ESPN Bet is 86.5 wins. I'm playing the over. I've got the Twinkies at 90-72, which is a more bullish projection than most, Buster. But I got three reasons for you. And those three reasons are Royce Lewis, Edouard Julian, and Pablo Lopez. So if you reduce the minimum to 200 plate appearances, Royce Lewis had the 12th best batting line in all of baseball last year. Jose Altuve was 11th and Bryce Harper was 13th. That's the kind of company he was in a relatively small sample size. Edouard Julian had a 400 on base, after the All-Star break last season, and figures to be their everyday leadoff hitter, which is a position in which he thrived last season. And I think Pablo Lopez is poised for a monster season. He increased his strikeout total by 60 year over year in the exact same number of starts. There are very few pitchers that have a sweeper and a curveball that they can legitimately use as a putaway pitch. He's got both. I'm starting to see that as a win-win trade for both sides with what Luis Arraez has done in Miami. You could do a lot worse than Pablo Lopez to be a dark horse Cy Young contender. I'm not sure how dark a horse it is, but I think he is going to have a magnificent season as he sort of solidifies himself as the ace of that rotation.
No, I would. What you just said is right. I think that you can make an argument. He's a front runner to win that award now that it's clear that Cole is not going to pitch a full season. You know, that's potentially how dominant he is. I mentioned we're going to have a preview of the Twins. We're also going to talk about the Cardinals. I wanted to ask you about our top 100 list, which came out on Monday, and ask you first and foremost about a player who's either not on the list or a player who's way too low for your liking that you think was essentially a snub.
So for those of you watching on the Zoom, I'm smiling because I'm a homer. And so, Buster, I would like you to guess which Philly I thought was ranked too low on this list. Take a stab.
But there could be a bunch, you know? There potentially could be a bunch. Is it JT Realmuto?
Zach Wheeler. So Zach Wheeler is ranked number 22 on this list. Okay, Buster? But I'm going to convince you. Scratch that. I'm going to try and convince you that he should be ranked much higher and should be in the running for consideration as the best pitcher in all of baseball. Okay, Buster? The numbers are these. Obviously, WAR is far from a perfect place to end, but it's a perfectly fine place to start. And there are three services that produce it better than any other. Baseball Reference, FanGraphs, and Baseball Prospectus. At Baseball Reference, over the last three seasons, the 21, 22, and 23 seasons, Gerrit Cole ranks second, and Zach Wheeler ranks first. At FanGraphs, Kevin Gausman ranks second, and Zach Wheeler ranks first. And at Baseball Prospectus, Aaron Nola ranks second, and Zach Wheeler ranks first. At all three services, Zach Wheeler has produced more value than any pitcher in baseball across the last three seasons. It is my opinion he was robbed of the Cy Young Award when Corbin Burns won it. Ultimately, Burns won it because of rate stats, whereas Zach Wheeler absolutely should have won it because of the volume of innings. He also, parenthetically, has the lowest whip, walks plus hits per inning pitch. History of the postseason, he has been remarkably clutch for the Phillies, and that's something I've obviously enjoyed and experienced firsthand. So is he the best pitcher in baseball? Look, that is a subjective question, and I think there are any number of players for whom you can make a credible case they are the answer. But Zach Wheeler is most definitely in that conversation, and thus, in my opinion, is ranked too low and number 22.
So you know who absolutely agrees with you is Carlos Correa, the twin shortstop. So a fun exercise I've done over the last week is to go with their top 100 list of players and basically telling them, look, think of this as a radio show. Here's our top 100, and I want you to tear us apart. I want you to pick all kind, you know, disagree with us at any point. And his quote to me was, I like Zach Wheeler, I'd like to see him higher. I probably flip Zach over Corbin Burns. I'm going to put together a rip of sound for Sunday's podcast with all the player response. But it was really interesting. There's no doubt that the player who other players supported saying, what are you guys doing, was Mike Trout. Like, they could not believe that Mike Trout was at 19 on our list. And you could tell that there was some guys were totally offended by that. Like, you're talking about an all-time great player dropping down to 19? Matt Olson, the first baseman of the Atlanta Braves, said to me, you know, I'm a little bit more swayed by guys who've been there and done it for a while. Mike Trout at 19, that's ridiculous. Rafael Devers talked about Kyle Tucker, who's at 28. He thinks he should be higher than that. And I personally agree with him. And there was a lot of support for Julio Rodriguez. You know, he's got two full years in now with the Seattle Mariners. Guys were saying he could come up. And that's the reason why I asked you about JT Realmuto, was that a lot of players looked at our list at where you had JT at number 60, far behind Adley Rutschman at number 11. And that did not go over well with some players. What do you think?
I need to present an unpopular opinion to you, Buster. And that unpopular opinion is this. We in the media are better evaluating players. And that is evidenced by all sorts of things that we see in other sports. Both the NBA and the NFL, after their season, get sort of all pro teams that their players submit. And candidly, they're never close to as good as the media's. And that's because the players aren't paying the kind of attention that we are. The players aren't doing the kind of research they are. The players are much more subjected to their own biases than we are because they have first-person emotional experiences. That is not to say they can't do a credible job of ranking people. But the notion that Mike Trout is inarguably, say, a top 15 player at this point is foolish because Mike Trout hasn't played baseball, or at least much of it, in a pretty long time. JT Realmuto has very clearly been passed by Adley Rutschman. And I think there's probably a lag when it comes to players as far as who's got next. And I understand that if you're playing the game, if you're immersed in the game, you probably have a whole career of experience with which to draw. You might not see the regression that's occurring in Realmuto. And who knows? Maybe you only saw, you know, Adley Rutschman in person in one series, and maybe he went 1-for-9 in that series. And so I happen to think that getting player feedback is super cool. I'm not so sure that it's as meaningful as the public might believe. What say you?
I'm going to defer to our good friend Carlos Correa, who finished our list, okay, and I think you'd agree with me, among players, he would be in the top 10 for evaluating other players. Like he loves numbers, loves advanced metrics, has a lot of advice, has a lot of thoughts. When we decided to do this project, he was the first player I thought of. I'm like, oh, I'm going to Carlos because Carlos knows players. I think he scored on the SAT like 1580. Really bright, knows the game, outstanding. And he got done when he looked at the list. He said, I got to say, it's a pretty solid list. I like this list a lot. If you did this list, then you know baseball. How about that?
Okay. So look, I agree with you on your characterization of Carlos Correa. He'll be a media superstar the day that he retires, the day that he wants to be one. And the fact that he gave us a pretty high score, that does mean a lot to me. So I think we can meet in the middle.
Very nice. All right, Hembo, go change some diapers. I look forward to talking with you next week.
Later, friends.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview, St. Louis Cardinals, Machinations.
St. Louis worked in the offseason to rebuild its rotation, which was the source of its problems last year. The Cardinals moved swiftly in the winter to sign three veterans, All-Star Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, and Kyle Gibson. St. Louis also signed veteran shortstop Brandon Crawford at a time when they're looking to develop young speedster Mason Wynn at that position.
The weakest link.
Rival evaluators wonder if St. Louis's additions will actually prove to be an upgrade over what happened in 2023. Lynn is 36 years old, and while he has roots in the Cardinals organization, he posted a 5.73 ERA last year, while allowing a staggering 44 homers in 183 and two-thirds innings. Gibson was regarded as an excellent leader on a young Orioles team, but he's also 36, and coming off a season in which he posted a 4.73 ERA.
A guy to watch.
By Nolan Arenado's lofty standards, last year was a downer. He had an OPS of 774 and an adjusted OPS plus of 109, his lowest since the truncated COVID season of 2020. Arenado has four seasons left on a contract that runs through the 2027 season for $109 million. And given that he's one of the highest paid players on the team, the Cardinals need Arenado, who turns 33 in April, to have a big bounce back season.
Win projection.
With a mess of problems last year, the Cardinals finished 71-91. Paul and Bikides predict St. Louis will win 80 games. Sarah Lang says 83. Pecota's numbers, 84.5 wins, the most in the National League Central. I'm not nearly as bullish on them. I've got the Cardinals at 76 wins. Derek Gould covers the St. Louis Cardinals for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. There'll be a day when he makes a speech in Cooperstown because of the great work he does as a reporter. Derek, how you doing?
I'm good. I don't know how to – well, thanks, Buster. I'm kind of caught flat-footed there. I don't know how to respond to that. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Well, you and Mark Topkin, I think, and two beat writers, so that'll definitely be a – there'll be a time for both of you guys to speak there. So – as you know, the big question about the Cardinals coming off of last year, well, there are a lot of questions about the team, but maybe the biggest one is the rotation. Do you think with the moves they've made, Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, that they're actually going to be significantly better than they were last year? That's the question I hear from rival evaluators.
Yeah, I think they have an important head start on being better. I think if there's a way to sort of give yourself a bedrock to begin with, a strong foundation on which to build better, it's with pitching, and it's with consistent pitching. You know, just in asking around people, you know, you ask them about what they want from their rotation, and they talk about how they want to get, you know, 28 starts from this guy, 30 starts from that guy, 160 innings from this guy. Well, the Cardinals, you know, are betting on more than that from all of their guys. And they feel they have the track record to do that. You look at what Kyle Gibson did for Baltimore last year. Certainly Sonny Gray as a runner-up for the American League Cy Young. But even like Lance Lynn, who struggled last year and gave up tons of home runs. Kyle Gibson gave up a lot of hits. But you got to be in a lot of innings to do that. And they think that if they can get a lot of innings, they're going to have an offense to carry. They just need that consistency. You know, what was it, like 20, 22 different pitchers last year through 180 or more innings? Four of them are now in the Cardinals rotation. Four of them. And that's a pretty good place to start. I have, for the last few years, you and I have talked, have asked them over and over again where they're going to get their innings from, because they're just as a number that a rotation has to provide or an organization has to provide. And year after year, they said, well, we'll find them. And year after year at the trade deadline, they've been trading for a Lester or a Happ just to survive, you know, or a Quintana to thrive and get them into the playoffs. This year, they're starting with that. And that's a good place to start. So I don't want to have been critical of them for the last few years for not having enough innings. And then say this year, when they do have the innings, at least that's a good place to start the rebuild.
This is related to the pitching, and it's something that Paul Hembekides, when he knew we were going to talk to you, left for you. He sort of gave us some data and some questions. Last year, the Cardinals allowed 72 more ground ball hits than the year before. They were last in defensive efficiency. He wonders if they were either ill-prepared or poorly suited for this new world of no defensive shifts.
It is both an answer, as well as also kind of undone a little bit by personnel, and also probably the most frustrating and disappointing first half of defense in Nolan Arenado's otherwise platinum-coated career. He was super frustrated with how he played, never been even close to a minus player at third base, and just felt like he was for the first half of last year. He modified his workload. He wanted to save some. He talked to guys about how, as you get older, how do you maintain your durability in the field with all the work that he would do. You watched him. You saw him at Coors Field or at, you know, Busch Stadium. But a lot of times, I remember watching him go through drills at Coors Field and go, oh, my gosh, what is this guy? He's playing a game before he's in the game with all the things that he's going through. And he really wanted to modify that. Well, what he learned was that he maybe took a little zip off his arm, and there were times when his throw just wasn't there or the play just wasn't there like it used to be. Second half, much better. He went back to doing a lot of what he did and there's rethought like how to do it. So I think it's all of those things. They also had really good internal discussions/debates about what their reports were telling them where to go and how they were off, whether it was execution or whether it was ability. All of that went in there, but they also felt that in the new world of no shifts, they were just off in their preparation and positioning at times, and that caught up with them.
Again, a question related to the pitching. Wilson Contreras had the strangest first year of any free agent that I've ever seen, where he's basically being taken off the field less than a month into his tenure with the Cardinals. He had a lot of rumblings about, you know, how he was connecting with pitchers. Yeah, what are you seeing in Wilson Contreras this year, and what would lead anyone to at this point to believe that it's going to be different?
Well, we can start with where we did at the very beginning of this conversation is three new starters are coming in. So he is not having to throw, with the exception of Lance Lynn coming back, but you know, he's been elsewhere. So it's not like these three starters are going to be like, man, I remember throwing to Yachty, or Yachty would have never called that, or gosh, it was fun playing catch with Yachty every 5 days. We don't have that. They know Wilson as the Cardinals catcher, and they know Wilson's presence and Wilson's confidence coming into spring training, and his enthusiasm coming out of last year is remarkable, Buster. I mean, look, I've you know, this is what, my 20th spring training. So I've seen a lot. I guess I haven't seen too many Cardinals catchers other than Yachty or Molina, come to think of it. But what Wilson did last year stands out as one of the more professional seasons I've ever seen. He went through what could have been heartbreak Right on the eve of going back to Wrigley for the first time as a rival, he's told to take fly balls in left field and that he's going to be DH for a while. I mean, like, as if that weekend wasn't emotional enough, then he has to add that on top of it, of being told, hey, look, you're not going to catch for a little while. And then he just roared during the second half offensively. He was superb. And so he comes out of that and feels like, okay, I'm a part of this now. He feels ownership of the position. He feels ownership of the team. He's a presence in the clubhouse. And these three new guys are coming in. And let me add this. What Sonny Gray has done to make sure that that Wilson feels like he's a part of everything that Sonny Gray does has been noticeable. It's been overt. They share notes, they share gifts, they share nicknames, they share live BPs. And during live BPs, Sonny Gray will stop and go, I really like what you're doing there, Wilson. I'm really like what you're thinking. We're on the same page, but here's what I want to try. Let's try it this way, but maybe we'll go back to what your way. It's always positive. It's always enthusiastic. It's talking through things. And it's given Wilson this real presence in the clubhouse with the pitchers and also with the young catchers. I think it's fascinating how he's come out of it, and I'm eager to watch as this becomes a little bit more of Wilson's team and not the team that was looking around for Yadier Molina.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about Sonny Gray. You know, he's a Vanderbilt guy. I mean, one of the good SEC right. schools, not like yours. Just kidding.
What is that about? Like 0-18? I've never seen your school do that in the SEC.
Oh my goodness.
All I say is we're 10 wins away from our first Final Four, buddy. That's all I'm looking for.
How much pressure is on John Mozeliak there, head of baseball operations this year, and Ollie Marmol?
Well, quite a lot when you think about the manager going into the final year of his contract. That is something that they both talked about. I've talked with both of them about it. And, you know, John Mozeliak has said, look, if it becomes a topic of conversation or it looks like it's going to be a problem, they'll have to address it and they'll look into it. Marmol has insisted, and there's really no reason to doubt him, that it's not on his mind. He knows that, these jobs are not forever. And there you prove them every day. There is a palpable urgency around the team that they don't want the trend to be downward. They want that to be an outlier. They want that to be the blip and then get back on to what their brand is. They feel that they have that in place. They've been challenged here a little bit by injuries. You know, they're going to start the year with two-thirds of their outfield not available, after going to such lengths to announce who their outfielders are. But there's a palpable, especially early in camp. You know how it goes. I mean, you know the pace of spring training, right? Things are a little bit like, all right, when's the season going to get here? When's the season? And there's some trepidation around camp at this time of year because the cuts are coming and, you know, all of that. But early on in camp, there was a palpable sense of a pressure on this team and no valve for it to go. They couldn't win. They couldn't start winning games on February 20th. And yet it was like, that's all that matters. You got to start winning games. And it was really, you could feel it in the clubhouse that, all right, that you got to win the division, that this is a year that the Cardinals have to get back on track. And getting back on track is not contending. Getting back on track is winning and winning in the playoffs and pushing out. And that's the only way they prove that last year was not an outlier, or I'm sorry, that last year was an outlier and not a harbinger of changes. And changes will come if changes don't happen in the standings.
And what's interesting too about the Cardinals is if the team doesn't do well, you know this, a lot of the potential managerial candidates out there in the market, so many have connections with the Cardinals. And whether it's Alex Cora, you know, who's in the last year of his contract with the Red Sox, Skip Schumacher, who's an up-and-coming managerial star. And then there's the guy who hit 700 homers and had 3,000 hits in Albert Pujols. And so we'll see how that goes.
Your interview with him was excellent. I hope everybody got a chance to listen to that, particularly Cardinal fans. Just him talking about Albert Pujols talking about wanting to be a manager and how he has put himself in different rooms to learn different things about the game, commissioner's office, broadcast booth, manager, dugout. I think it's fascinating what he's doing. I'm really eager to see where it takes him. And we found out that, in August 2028, he has to have at least a weekend free there so that he can go to Cooperstown. But otherwise, I'd be real eager to see what he's doing at that time.
Yeah, I walked away from that saying, yep, he's going to manage. You know, I mean, you could feel that.
Yep. I had that same talk with him at the World Series. And I was like, I wonder how this is going to go. And I said, how are you going to be like talking to the media constantly and all that? And we talked for a little bit. And I left there going, oh, my gosh, this TV thing he's doing really well at. But no, he's going to manage. He's going to manage someday.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you, Buster.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview, Minnesota Twins, machinations.
The Twins had a lot of juggling to do to manage payroll this winter. Ace pitcher Sonny Gray walked away as a free agent, and Jorge Polanco was traded to the Mariners. They signed first baseman DH Carlos Santana and picked up outfielder Manny Margot in a salary dump from the Dodgers.
The weakest link.
Injuries, as always, seem to be a major factor for the Twins. Carlos Correa missed 27 games. Byron Buxton, now 30 years old, played 80 games last year, all at DH, something he intends to change this year when he's talking about returning to the outfield. Last year, Buxton hit 207. And Royce Lewis, who has battled injuries throughout his career, played in only 58 games.
A guy to watch.
In 2023, Lewis showed the impact he can have when he's in the lineup. In those 58 games, Lewis mashed 15 homers, batted 309 with an adjusted OPS plus of 150. He looks like he's just starting to scratch the surface.
Win projection.
Being around the Twins this spring swayed me. I'm saying they win 89 games and take the division despite improvement from other teams. It makes me feel better to know that Sarah Langs also has them in 89 wins. Hembo says 90 wins for Minnesota. Pecota is not as bullish, pegging the Twins at 84.7 wins. Justin Morneau is a former MVP in the American League. He's an analyst on Twins broadcast. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I was around the Twins the other day, and I was really struck by how super confident this group of players are about what they have. In terms of the offseason they've had, they haven't made a lot of big moves, but the players feel so good about what they have. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that starts with Carlos Correa and expectations he brought in. He signed, he's a very smart player. He looked at the farm system. He looked at what's coming. He looked at what's currently on the roster, and was one of the reasons why he wanted to sign in the first place and then why he wanted to come back. And I think it starts with him, and he set the expectation. He's a guy who's been to the World Series, won World Series, and that's his goal, is to get this group to the World Series. And I think when you start talking about that, you set expectations, and that's what the expectations is for this group. They talk about winning the division. They talk about winning playoff series, and that's what the goal is coming into camp. But it's always good when you set those high expectations. It lets everyone know, hey, this is, you show up, you do your job, and that's what this group is prepared to do.
Royce Lewis last year played in 58 games. You finally got to see an extended period of him in the big leagues, and he had an adjusted OPS plus of 150, 15 homers in 58 games. What do you see in him?
I mean, he's just the kind of player you build around. He has that personality that people gravitate towards. I mean, it's a special human being on top of a special human or a special baseball player. It's incredible to see just the way people are. He shows up upbeat every day. He makes everyone around him better. It's just that infectious personality that he had so much taken away from him at the early part of his career that a lot of guys get to play and then deal with injuries and then learn that appreciation for being in the big leagues and putting on a uniform. He had to do that before he got to the big leagues. So every day he shows up to the clubhouse, it's like the best day he's had all year. And that kind of rubs off on everyone else. And then on top of it, just the talent and his desire to get better. He's a very smart kid. He's adaptable. He's changed positions, but he's adapted well over there. And he's hit for more power than I think most people expected. But this guy, I could see him being a top 10 MVP finisher for a lot of years with the skill set that he has.
Byron Buxton played 80 games last year, all at DH. What's the plan for him this year?
I think to get in center field, I think he'll still DH a few days a week, but he doesn't like DHing. I think everyone who's DH'd knows that if you've played the field and all of a sudden you have to DH and the day you go 0-for-4 and the team loses, you felt like you've contributed absolutely nothing to that game. And I think Buxton, with his ability to play as good a center field as anyone in the game, will have that impact. I told somebody yesterday, I said, 120 games, Byron Buxton, take the over. I haven't seen him look this good. I was down there early in camp. The bat speed is there. the smile is on his face, the most important thing. He's running pain-free. I mean, he just looks like he's free and he's comfortable and he looks like he's excited for this season, you know, to happen. And I think he said it the other day, I'm ready for the season to start. So he's a special player. So if you look at the combination of him, Correa, Royce Lewis, all at different kind of stages in their careers, but all top 100 players in the league, it's a pretty, you know, fearsome trio at the top of your lineup that you can run out there. And these guys are really, really high end players and guys that'll show up and want to win. And I think it's a great thing to have. They're in a good spot.
In the aftermath of the departure of Sonny Gray, how would you assess the Twins rotation?
Pablo Lopez took some big steps forward last year. He should be in that Cy Young conversation again this year. I think he's a guy that is going to continue to get better. Maybe the smartest player in the entire league. You know, he's a guy that could have got into medical school at the age of 16. I mean, he's such a smart kid. It's incredible to watch him work, watch him adapt, learning new pitches, and then taking him to a game, being able to execute him. I think there's an underrated part of this staff too. I think Bailey Ober, when he's been on the field, he's been one of the better pitchers in baseball. I think as a starter, he's underrated. Joe Ryan's going to be a really interesting year to see. He's added in some new mix, but I think the bullpen is a real strength of this team, and the way Rocco likes to mix and match, the way he likes to use all his pieces on his roster, I think there's a lot of high end arms at the end of that back end of the bullpen, and this team really matches up with anyone. If they get a lead late, they should win a lot of games, and I think that's going to help them. It sets them up not only to win the division, but it also sets you up to play that playoff-style baseball where the starter goes through the lineup, you know, two times, and then all of a sudden you turn it over to the bullpen. You have, you know, four or five guys down there with upper 90s fastballs and plus secondary stuff that could be closers on a lot of teams.
So I want to ask you about divisional context, because we always talk about the American League Central and how in most years it feels like it's weaker than other divisions. When you look at it, and you've seen the Tigers get better. The Royals clearly are working to get better. Cleveland always seems to find pitching. Do you look at this as being the Twins, and then there's a gap, and then there's the other team, or you think it's going to be closer than that?
It's funny. It's whoever I pick as the next upcoming team usually finishes last. So I'm I'm not usually too reliable on these things, but I like what the Tigers are doing. They have a lot of young talent there. They have some really good young offensive players. The depth in the rotation might be a challenge for them, but Skubal is as good as anyone. I think he has the potential to be as good as anyone in the league with the stuff he has. The challenge for them has been keeping their starters healthy and keeping their guys on the field, but they're still not quite as deep as the Twins, I don't feel, but they're going to be better. The White Sox are an interesting team with expectations they've had the last few years. They're flying a little bit under the radar, but there's still a lot of talent there. The top part of their order, as long as they're holding on to Dylan Cease, that's a number one at the top of the rotation. Do they have enough pitching? Do they have enough depth? I'm not sure. But yeah, I look at it as the Twins are the favorite in this division, but it's going to be a lot more challenging than it has been the last few years, where there's been either one or two teams going through rebuild at the same time. And also on top of it, I think less divisional games has an impact too. You know, you're not playing 19 times against each team. That number's been reduced. So you're playing everybody. You're playing the Dodgers every year, playing all those really good teams in the East that you didn't see. So the divisional stuff is less important, but you still do play a ton of games against your own division. I think the Twins have to be looked at as the favorite at this point.
Justin, thanks for doing this. Always love talking with you. Thanks.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by DirecTV. Get the best of live sports and streaming together. No satellite dish required. Now stream DirecTV satellite free.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hey, everybody. We got another round of Bleacher Tweets for you all. First, we're going to kick it off with Elizabeth Hart, who's one of our faithful Bleacher Tweeters. She asks, I know it's highly unlikely, but given the Jays pitching situation with Gausman and Manoa, shouldn't they be in serious talks with Snell and Montgomery?
No, I think they're going to be okay. I like their starting pitching. And I think they've got some depth in that range. Now, you know, maybe Montgomery would make sense. I'll say it again. I mentioned it earlier this week. I keep on hearing that Blake Snell, you know, his preference is to be in Southern California. And maybe in part because the Angels are clearly willing to pay him. They're in negotiations. We'll see how it turns out.
And here's our next message from Randy.
Hello, this is Randy from Statsburg, New York. Love the show. A couple of weeks ago, you had Jake Peavy on, and you were talking about some of the best starting rotations in baseball, but neither of you said anything about the Seattle Mariners. Just curious, I wonder how you assess that rotation. And since we're on the Mariners, wouldn't that be a great location for J.D. Martinez, both for the player and the team? Wonder what you think. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, I love that, Randy, for the depth of the Mariners. And you're right. You know, we had Dave Sims on, and we talked about their rotation, arguably, you know, being in that conversation for the number one rotation. I'm in the process. I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, of talking with executives for a poll, and the feedback I'm getting right now from the executives that the Mariners are a team they look at as being an absolute sleeper coming into this year because of the strength of that staff.
Here's the next one.
Hey, Buster. My name is Mehul from San Diego, California. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. Believe it or not, I've been listening since the Peter Pasquarelli days. Anyways, my question is about a team no one ever talks about, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Yamamoto, Otani, and some of the young arms coming up, what does Walker Buehler's future look like with the team? To me, it always felt like he was the one Kershaw was passing the baton to. Thanks so much.
Yes, yeah, so I talked to Walker, I want to say about a month ago. It was before spring training began, and he was feeling good. He was feeling good about his progress. He is going to miss the start of the regular season. It felt like that he was thinking more along the lines of like late April, early May, maybe mid-May. And let's face it, with the way the Dodgers look at these things, I think they'll continue to slow play it. They'll continue to tell him to take his time. Because really, when they think of their season, they're thinking of October as well. And, you know, at this point, it's hard to say exactly what he's going to bring to the table. But I know from talking with Dodger people, they think he's going to be a factor.
And here's our next one from Andrew.
Hey, Buster. My name is Andrew. I'm from New Jersey. Love the show. I'm a big Texas Rangers fan. And I have a question about the Houston Astros. And I hope this doesn't sound bitter, but I see the Astros being placed in front of the Rangers in a lot of projections and things of that nature. Obviously, they have kept most of their core team. But I wonder if you think losing Dusty Baker will have a big effect on their chances this year. That's no knock at Joe Espada. He's been with them for over 5 years now. I just wonder, with how much Dusty did for them, if they might take a step back, or more of a step back than people think, in his absence. Love the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the kind words. Look, if they were a young team, then I do think that, you know, you lose an experienced manager, someone that they've won with in the past, someone who is, you know, as accomplished as Dusty as it could make a, be a factor. But, you know, Alex Bregman's going to have the season he's going to have. Jose Altuve is going to have the season he's going to have. I mean, it really comes down to, I think, more than Joe Espada, it's going to come down to that rotation. Does Christian Javier get his fastball back? We recently had Steve Sparks on, and let's face it, we ran through some of the pitching questions with Christian Javier and with Framber Valdez, with Justin Verlander. I think they're going to be okay, but that to me is the big X factor in this race, and the bigger impact than the manager will.
That wraps up our Bleacher Tweets for this week, everyone. If you want to get a message to Buster, you can leave a message at 406-404-8460. Or you can at Buster on Twitter and hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Justin Morneau, Derek Gould, Colin Bikides, Sean Bartley. Sean, thanks for doing this.
Love you, bro.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.